This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey there, everybody. Want to give a shout out to all of our service members and their families for keeping us safe, both here and abroad. And thank you so much to the family members who hold the fort down. Thank you for keeping us safe here in America and all of our interests overseas as well. You know, this is Military Appreciation Month, and Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. They offer member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to help empower their members to help them reach their goals. Here's one of our offers in honor of Military Appreciation Month. Join and get $50 when you open a credit card. Here's the disclaimer. You got to join and open your membership savings account between May 1st and May 31st. The annual percentage yield is 0.25% for membership savings accounts, $5 minimum balance to open. You got to maintain the membership savings account to obtain the bonus. Check all this out at NavyFederal.org for full terms and conditions. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate to see all the Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
You heard of this thing, the 8-minute abs?
Yeah, sure, 8-minute abs. Yeah, the exercise video.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, this is going to blow that right out of the water. Listen to this. 7-minute abs.
Live on the YouTuber machine, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and it's a good thing you're here because we're asking the question, how are you planning to grow your fortune? We're walking through your four choices so you find the path that fits you with our Friday Roundtable Gang. Today, that gang features certified financial planner Eric Brotman, plus the hero of the popular website, Yes, I Am Cheap, Sandy Smith. And finally, joining the roundtable for the very first time, it's the president of France. It's just Doc G. But that's not all. Halfway through the show, I'll share my saintly trivia question. And now a guy who even the Pope listens to, he could, hypothetically, it's Joe Salzi.
Hey there, buddy, and happy Friday. I'm so glad that you're with us, whether you're here live or listening to the podcast. I am Joe Salzi. And you know what, Doug? I'm sure the Pope is in the audience. I'm sure. You know, big fan of the show.
Weekly.
Nothing else that he'd rather be doing. We've got a great group of people to talk about these four different ways that you can go from beginning to build wealth to all four of these paths will lead you to uber wealthy spots. But they also have pitfalls. So we're going to go through the four ways you can do it. If you're just beginning, I think it's going to be exciting. And if you're midway through your path, you might go, oh, maybe I need to rethink where I'm at based on this. And before we start, this episode of Stacking Benjamins brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, it isn't just your business, it's your life. Whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's where State Farm Small Business Insurance comes in. State Farm agents are small business owners too, and know what it takes to help you prioritize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Let's talk to our good neighbors on the round table. We will start off with a woman in the greater New York area. I'm not sure where she's at right now.
I'm in the wilds of Long Island where I've gone to die.
It's Sandy. I miss you so much. How have you been?
I've been good. I see you looking svelte.
Well, thanks. Likewise.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's been up in Sandy Smith's world? What's going on? Is the Elevate conference happening this year?
Shh, I can't like preemptively announce anything on this show that two people watch.
She comes out swinging.
It's like I never left.
It's totally like she's never left.
Yeah, I've been busy annoying people on Instagram and building a business with my husband and watching you guys make all the money.
Yeah. Oh, all the money. Yes. All the money's in podcasting. There was so much money in podcasting, Sandy, that our next guest got out of it. Eric Brodman's here.
Yeah. No, that was the fifth path to building wealth. It didn't make the top four. So I hosted a show for 5 years. I had a lot of fun doing it. And I can put everything I earned from those 5 years of podcasting in one pocket comfortably.
So I have to ask you, for the baseball fans out there, you have a new ownership group
of
your local baseball team.
We do.
There might be some good stuff here again this year. What's going on in Baltimore?
Well, listen, the O's are giving us some hope. This town needs it because we just had a major bridge go down a couple of weeks ago. And so we've got...
I didn't hear anything about
that. Oh, my goodness. No, we had a giant ship destroy a major thoroughfare, and it's going to take 4+ years to rebuild it. And so the port and the economy here are going to get clobbered. But the baseball team looks good. So, you know, you take the good with the bad, I guess. It is going to be a fun season. The expectations are high, which is usually a recipe for disaster, but my fingers are crossed.
Boy, and about the bridge, for people that didn't know how sarcastic I was being very sarcastic. In fact, watching that video, Eric, yeah, I was watching the cars crossing, knowing what was coming. Yeah. And hoping everybody got off, and sadly, almost everybody did, but...
Yeah, man. No, that's not something... I was in Colorado at the time. I was at a conference, and I saw that on TV and said, oh, man. And then flying back, I saw it from the air, which was really crazy. But yeah, that's going to affect a lot of people and a lot of businesses. And I was on I-95 yesterday, going back and forth to Philadelphia, and I've never seen more trucks on I-95, which means the new route is going to change traffic patterns, not for the better, for a lot of people.
I saw that there's assistance for local small businesses. Yeah. They set up some loan programs, low cost or zero cost loan programs for people to try to make it through.
Well, and the Chamber of Commerce is getting involved and assisting, and the governor's office has been good. And so I think it's going to, you know, always takes a village, and sometimes it takes a disaster to bring people together. And so there's always a silver lining. But I feel for the people who lost their loved ones. Obviously, that's the most important thing. Fortunately, there weren't very many, which doesn't lessen the impact for those people who were impacted, of course, but the ship had called in a mayday, and they closed the bridge to new traffic.
Saved a ton of lives.
A lot of lives. Plus, it was 1:30 in the morning. I mean, if that had been 9 o'clock in the morning, there'd have been hundreds of cars on that bridge. So, you know, there's a piece of good fortune there. It's that they knew it was coming. They couldn't do anything about it, but they gave some early notice, and it was not during rush hour. So,
well, a guy who 1:30 in the morning is like 9 a.m. to him, he's here. Another podcaster from Earn and Invest, Doc G, joins us. How are you, Matt? You're in the middle of a construction zone right now. Are you over there rebuilding the bridge? Is that what you're doing?
Well, I was going to make all sorts of funny, pithy jokes, and now you started talking about the bridge, so I can't make any jokes about debris hitting me and knocking me out and you guys calling 911. No. I mean, I had this whole setup here, and then you had to start talking about the bridge. So needless to say, if you hear all sorts of loud noises, it's not my stomach. It's the construction going on in my studio, my podcasting studio, which looks strangely like my house.
So you can collect even more money from all the podcasting that Sandy's looking to get into.
Correct.
Well, we've got a fantastic show today. We've got all three of you. If everybody can hang on for just a second, the show is free. And the way we keep it free is because of these wonderful sponsors. So hang out for just a moment.
Hey there, everybody. Want to give a shout out to all of our service members and their families for keeping us safe, both here and abroad. And thank you so much to the family members who hold the fort down. Thank you for keeping us safe here in America and all of our interests overseas as well. You know, this is Military Appreciation Month, and Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. They offer member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to help empower their members to help them reach their goals. Here's one of our offers in honor of Military Appreciation Month. Join and get $50 when you open a credit card. Here's the disclaimer. You got to join and open your membership savings account between May 1st and May 31st. The annual percentage yield is 0.25% for membership savings accounts, $5 minimum balance to open. You got to maintain the membership savings account to obtain the bonus. Check all this out at NavyFederal.org for full terms and conditions. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate to see all the Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Well, don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment's the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money's breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money in the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right, Sandy Smith is back. Eric Brotman's back. Doc G's here. And we've got neighbor Doug. How about that? So let's go. The inspiration for today's discussion comes to us from CNBC's Make It. I saw initially a blog post that talked about two different ways to reach wealth. And then as I was searching and doing my homework to prep for it, I actually found this piece that I like better that carves it into four different ways to build wealth. So this is by Tom Corley, who did a whole project back in the 20-teens around rich habits and what things millionaires do, kind of a follow-up to The Millionaire Next Door. And as a piece of that, he talked about four. So let's carve these out one by one. The first way, and this is the quote, the easiest way to build wealth for most people. Sandy, the first way he calls the saver investor's path. Do you mind sharing with our stacker community what this means?
Those are folks who save 20% or more of their income, invest it, and then retire to Long Island to live with me.
Is this of the four paths, and I'm going to foreshadow a little bit. Is this the one you're on?
Me? Are you kidding?
Yes.
You made the assumption that I'm ever going to retire. Absolutely not. I mean, to be fair, of course I'm saving, but I have no illusions of thinking that my savings will set me on the path to counting my thousands in my sleep.
But you've done a ton of investing over the years. You're always very public about the stocks that you pick and the investments you make.
I am super aggressive. I'm by the way, 45, and any investment advisor worth their salt would tell you to start being a little bit more conservative because, you know, you're 20 years from retirement age. And I am invested 95% in the stock market, straight up, which my advisor has a heart attack about, but I'm beating any returns that he could have had for me. So he sat back. So yeah, I'm pretty aggressive with that. But that's not where I think that it's going to catapult me into like wealth. I don't believe that, but I'm hedging my bets.
Well, you know what though, Sandy? I mean, this might be a side conversation, but I think it's important because we do see these rules of thumb, right? Start slowing down, landing the plane. But Eric, I know OG is not on this let's get more conservative at 45 train. He's like, listen, equities, equities, equities. Where do you sit on that? Does Sandy at 45 need to be taking her foot off the gas pedal?
Well, I'm smart enough not to render advice to Sandy without taking a really good look at her financial picture. And if she'd like to hire me as her financial advisor, I know we can talk after the show.
You're going to have to fight it out with my guy at Fidelity.
That's all right. I think I can take him. You know, in terms of my own plan, Joe, I have not gotten particularly more conservative with the exception of the money that I set aside for education for my daughter, because as she's getting closer to presumed matriculation, I do want to sort of have that in a pretty secure place. But in terms of the long-term money, you know, my portfolio probably looks quite a bit like Sandy's. A lot of public equity, a lot of private equity. I do have some cash, and I'm more concerned, frankly, about taxes than appreciation. You know, I've reached a point now, and I am definitely in this first group, sort of the saver investor path. I started young, and I've been putting away a lot of money for a long time, and I'm almost at that point where I'm working for fun. It's really close. And so
I don't think you are in this first group, though. I mean, we'll circle back to that later, Eric, when we get to the later groups. But I think you do all these things, but I don't think you're part of this first group.
Well, I don't know. I'll be anxious for your assessment and willing to accept that and do some introspection.
Group five, dumpster fire. That's where
Eric is. Yeah, I was going to say, Joe, I want to know where I am too. So Joe, make sure you, because I'm looking and I can't quite figure out where I fit either. So I'm looking forward to your assessment.
Well, and it is funny though, Doc, is that there is some cross-pollination as we get through these. You know, it's nice to put things in these black and white boxes, right? But life is not that. But certainly this seems to me to be the one that all of us can try to take part in.
Yeah, and it depends on the season of your life. So this is a great path when you're beginning your career. And so as opposed to saying, I have to be in this one group and I have to stay there my whole life, you know, a lot of people start as savers and investors, and then they're willing to take the jump and become a dreamer, right? Because all of a sudden they have some fuel under their wings and they feel like they can really kind of, they have some wind under their wings. They feel like they can really take off. So there's nothing saying that you have to stick to one path for your whole career.
And for our stackers that are hanging out and haven't looked at this article, dreamer has one connotation in society. We're not talking about that type of dreamer. We're talking about one of the four types of dreamers that Tom Corley has here. And you know what? We'll get to what a dreamer is here in just a second. But as Sandy said, they typically have this middle-class income. Tom writes, they had a low cost of living and preferred to save rather than spend lavishly. I mean, Sandy, that's got you written all over it. Yes, I am cheap. One of your previous appearances was about your wedding. I mean, yes. your
my
wedding was
$5,000 New York City wedding. Absolutely.
It was epically cheap. We went over this. We'll link to the full interview that we did with you about this because it was so badass. But just, can you give us like the 2-minute version of how cheap Sandy went with her wedding?
Yeah, I spent $5,000, including my dress, the venue, flowers, food, everything, because I absolutely refused to spend the money that people were spending on their weddings when I wanted to buy a house. So I'm sitting in my wedding fund instead of having spent that money for one day, one great party. And I'm sure people, you know, spend what makes sense to you, but we had a small wedding. We had 35 people, people who really meant a lot to us.
You can see where we rated.
You can
see
where we rated. Spinning this ring, right? Still married.
None of us were top 35, Joe.
I was there. Where were you guys?
You were there in spirit. You were there.
You were officiating, Doug.
We had a little cutout of Joe so people could pose with him. So, but yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with being a saver. Let me say that. For where I was for most of my life, that ability to save money didn't always exist. That's the first thing. Let's be honest about that, because a lot of people don't have that cushion and that wherewithal to be able to save that money. A lot of people, where I was just trying to survive, and you get to that point where you can finally start to save. And the ability to be able to save is a really good thing. And getting comfortable being in that phase where you can save, you don't miss the money, you see your money working for you, is a great first step. If that's the ladder that you land on and where you stay and where you're comfortable, more power to you. Love that for you. But thankfully, I've been able to surpass that and been able to evolve, I think.
Yeah, forget about savings. I'm not saving anymore. That's how you evolved.
No. I mean, I'm still saving, but that's not the only thing that I'm doing. And that's not my top priority. Like Eric said, you can do multiple things at once, right? So it was a priority at some point, but it's not.
Let's talk about a tactic here, though, Sandy. As your income grew, it seems like what you're saying is you were able, though, to still lock down the expenses to build the difference between what was coming in. I mean, a lot of people, you talk about people struggling. I remember in the early 90s, I wrote about this in my book, that it was so hard for me to save. But man, when my income started going up, Sandy, so did the expense train. Like, I was like, oh, because, quote, I deserve it.
Yeah, that creep, right? We all have that lifestyle creep. And I always tell people there's nothing wrong with that creep either. But a reasonable creep, right? What's reasonable? And what's reasonable for me versus what's reasonable for Joe might be different. He's living that lavish lifestyle in Texarkana.
Yes.
So that creep might be different than me on lonely Long Island, you know? So
you're so far away from civilization. I'm so much closer to it, is what you're saying.
I'm telling you, I'm here in the sand and water in Long Island, waiting for death, squeezing my grapes to make extra money.
Eric, I got to imagine this, of the four that we're going to talk about, this is where you spend, this is like your bread and butter area.
Well, you know, I think it's not so much about being frugal. I'm definitely not cheap. I like to spend money on nice opportunities, nice trips, nice experiences, more experiences than stuff. I'm not really into stuff, but I am into experiences and fine dining and good wine. And I do like to spend money. As long as you're putting away that percentage. And the article, the author said 20%. For some people, it's 10. For some people, it's 30. I mean, it depends where you are and what your track looks like. But I know what I need to put away on an annual basis to make sure that work is fully optional at some point, which is not to suggest I'm not going to work because I love what I'm doing, but it does mean I won't have to. But what comes in beyond that, I don't like to use the B word in mixed company. The B word budget, I don't like to use. And so I don't care when we're working with clients, I don't care how you spend what's left. If you're putting away 25 cents on the dollar and you're spending 75, I don't care how you do it. That makes no difference. You enjoy it your way. If that means you like to go to a fine restaurant twice a month instead of going to Applebee's every Wednesday, you do it. Whatever makes you happy.
But Lee, that 2 for $25, though.
Well, see, every Wednesday. I know where you are. But anyway, I do think once you're putting away that amount, that percentage, so that you avoid what Sandy called creep. You know, if you put away 25% of X, then when you make 3X and you still put away 25%, yes, your lifestyle can improve, but it won't change your opportunity at success financially.
Your future. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't like stuff, but you certainly like Legos with your daughter.
I do, although she's outgrown Legos and mostly me. We are working. This is a true story. We're working on a jigsaw puzzle now. And I'm pleased to share with your audience that the jigsaw puzzle is a 1,000-piece puzzle and it's a cartoon of 101 pooping puppies.
Oh, good.
Perfect. That's the intellectual pursuit going on at our house in the evenings right now. But yes, we've built every Lego we could find. We're going to need a second home to store them.
But that's why we thought Eric was perfect
for
this
round. Have you gone to Legoland?
Oh, yes.
Have you gone to Lego?
Of course.
I just went recently and I loved it. I think I loved it more than my son did.
Probably.
But your son must have loved it, Sandy.
Oh, my God. He went nuts. Legos all in the underwear.
Whenever I hear Legos, I think about sore feet, right?
Oh, yeah.
I just think about ugliness of my feet. Doc G, where's the gotcha here for people that are going down this path? Where do they get messed up?
Frugality obviously becomes an issue when you are keeping yourself from those things that truly make your life better. Then you're putting yourself at risk for not living the life you want to live. The other risk, obviously, or something to think about is it can be a really slow path. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people talk themselves out of this ability to make more money, and they have these limiting beliefs. And the truth of the matter is, I love this idea of living in abundance and not scarcity. And so the problem with that saver pathway is it can feel too much like scarcity. And so I think that's where people really get in trouble and something you have to watch out for.
Sandy, you're nodding.
Mostly because I lived it, because that's where I was for a long time. You know, my background is that I'm an immigrant, came here with a suitcase. So I think that was normal to be in that place for a long time. And it took a while for me mentally to evolve, and including my husband would have these conversations with me because a penny was a penny to be saved. And I finally evolved to the point where life is to be lived and enjoyed. That might be involving spending some money that I otherwise would have saved elsewhere, right? What quality of life are you living is the real question. And if all that does, the saving, is instill fear and restricts your ability to really live a good quality of life, that's where I think you need to kind of evolve your thought process around just being a saver.
I think a lot of it has to do with just listening to you talk, Sandy. A lot of it's around, you know, people put this happiness idea into the future. Doc, you and I have had long conversations about this, and happiness is wherever you are right now. I mean, trying to be as happy as you can wherever you are today, I think. And that, I think, is half the battle. Number two, Doc referenced this earlier, the dreamer's path. Tom, the author of this piece, calls this the hardest path to build wealth. Eric, what are the dreamers trying to do?
Well, according to the author of this article, the dreamers are trying to start a business or something that creates a passion project for them. Although he used the examples of becoming a successful actor, musician, or author. And I'm here to tell you as an author that did not create the path any more than podcasting did. Podcasting didn't make this list, which means it's slightly behind actor, musician, and author. And, you know, if you can go be Beyonce or Taylor Swift or something, God love you. But that really is a dreamer situation. I mean, there's only a very small, a tiny, infinitesimal percentage of people who can go that route. I mean, my daughter's a theater kid. She's looking at Broadway for her future. And I'm like, good, because nobody else thought of that. It'll be fine. That's not how it works. There's a tiny group. And you look at professional athletes and entertainers and all these people who reach this incredible pinnacle of financial success, or at least income, whether that's financial success or not. But if you consider how many people, you know, went from the peewees to the high school ball, to the college ball, and each time it gets cut and cut and cut and cut. And then even in the pros, where your career might only be 3 years and the minimum salary is not enough over 3 years to live forever. You know, there's a very small number of people who make an extreme amount of money. So I do think the dreamer's path, while rewarding, and I love the idea of entrepreneurship. If he had said entrepreneurs, I would have felt a little differently about it. But I think this dreamer idea, I think George Carlin called it the American dream. He said the reason they call it the American dream is because you have to be asleep to believe it. And wow. So that's probably the way I feel about the dreaming piece. I love the entrepreneur piece.
I think he is, Eric, splitting entrepreneurs into two types of people. I think one type is in that first saver investor path. They just want to be self-employed while they do it. The second piece, I think really, when I read this, I felt like they were trying to become famous.
Yeah.
Right. These are people that want to become, you know, they want to be Elon Musk or they want to be Beyonce.
But what about the people like me who are building an actual business? I mean, you have to, first of all, be intensely crazy to think that you can create and build a business that will be successful.
But Sandy, successful enough to be a saver investor, right? I mean, you're investing in this business instead of a stock. I mean, a stock is an equity. Your business is an equity.
But I feel like higher risk. If you're starting from scratch, right, what is there that you have to really build on? Unless you're like a consultant or something, somebody where you're leaning back on your expertise, right? But then there's so many of us who do have an entrepreneurship background or who have that mindset, who are willing to start something from scratch because the payoff could be great or it could be a passion project. It could be both. Why not? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there are a lot of us that are doing it. And you guys have heard the stats. Black women are the highest percentage starting businesses today. Why is that? There are a number of different reasons. I think his description was intensely narrow because it doesn't really capture all of the nuances about what's going on and who's in this category and the why of it all.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with agency, right? So the idea behind being a dreamer is exactly what Eric was talking about, is we don't necessarily have agency to be a Major League Baseball player. Like, you have to be the right person at the right time with the right skill set and a heck of a lot of luck. Whereas being an entrepreneur, and this is where I think he really missed out in this article, being an entrepreneur, we have a little bit more agency over, right? That is something that we can build towards. And so I think that's what really separates these two and why this article, I think, in that piece was lacking a little bit.
They now, Doc, sell ring lights at Target and Walmart. Ring lights. And I think when we talk about dreamer, this is kind of what he's getting at. Do you think more people taking the risk that Sandy's taking with a business versus the risk of buying a ring light and you're going to hit it big on TikTok, should more of us be going toward option one?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think we should all go for joyful entrepreneurship as opposed to fame and influencer status. Because again, what you're really doing is setting yourself up for anxiety. And this is very much how I talk about purpose. Like, if you make your purpose a big audacious purpose, or if you decide you're going to get wealth through this big audacious plan, but you don't have a lot of agency to get there, what you're doing is you're setting yourself up for disappointment and anxiety. On the other hand, if you decide to build a business that's manageable, something that you might find some joy in doing or something that's appealing or pleasing or that you care about, there's a lot more abundance there. Like, going for the big audacious goal is actually scarce because only a small number of people are going to get there, and it's a win-lose game. You either win or you lose. Whereas what I think Sandy's talking about is building entrepreneurship is much more abundant and a lot more, we have a lot more abundance we can go after, and there's a lot more winners in that game.
You're bringing a whole bunch of people with you if you're building a business.
Totally.
Oh yeah. Even for us, we look at it as one of our partners in the business is my 6-year-old son. There he was scribbling his name on the documents, not very legible, but he's a partner. For us, it's an opportunity for us to build wealth that could outlast us and create something that he could potentially want to be involved in the future. And then a 6-year-old, he's involved anyway in some areas. So I would say there are dreams that are involved in this, but I think we are, if you're an entrepreneur, this kind of an entrepreneur, you have to be very realistic as well. It's not, you know, I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be Taylor Swift. There's a lot of like realistic thought process that goes into being this kind of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I want to focus for a moment more on the Taylor Swift wannabes because I think that's where his head is at. Eric, did you say earlier that your daughter's going into the arts?
Well, she's going into high school, but she's a musical theater kid. So far, that's the direction I think we're headed. And so we're learning a lot about some of the summer programs, and we've talked to people who have succeeded in this career, and she's finding mentors, and she's wonderfully talented. But wonderfully talented at eighth grade is very different than wonderfully talented for a career. And so You know, my hope is that when she goes to school, which presumably she will do, she will study fine arts, but also something else so that she can, if it becomes a career, lovely. If it doesn't, it can be a hobby and a joy for life, but she can also make a living at something that's a little bit more mainstream, whatever it is. And of course, I want her to be happy more than I want her to be wealthy. She can do whatever makes her brings her joy, but that's a tough path. I have not talked to very many actors who aren't also waiting tables at three different places and doing 100 auditions to get one gig and then having a gig not happen. And I mean, it's hard. They got five roommates in Manhattan. And I mean, it's not an easy life, but I think they love it. And so if it's a passion thing and it brings you joy, who am I to say it's the wrong path?
I was hired when I first switched over to financial media. I was hired by a wonderful woman who is teaching financial literacy to actors and dancers and performers of all types. And she brought up something really interesting, which is anyone who's in an artistic field has this belief that being knowledgeable about money is irrelevant to them. It doesn't matter. They don't go hand in hand. And yet she says that it matters even more, because when you don't know where the food's going to come from next, you'd better know where the budget is. Doug earmuffs. We got to tell Doug earmuffs every time we say the B word.
Yeah, I don't like the B word.
But you know, we got to have the expenses locked down. We got to know what's where things are at. We got to know the heartbeat.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's great to chase something that makes you happy. But to go back to something Sandy said, when you talk about, you know, being entrepreneurial, which is definitely not a guaranteed ticket to some kind of success, there are plenty of businesses that don't succeed. In fact, there are people who are serial entrepreneurs who have had three or four whiffs before they hit something that really makes sense. And so I think it really comes down to your personality, your grit, your drive, and your comfort with risk. It is far riskier, in my opinion, to start a company, especially if you're borrowing to do it, than it is to pick up an investment in the market somewhere. And you're investing in yourself and you're investing in an idea, and you better sure darn know your why, and you better find a way to do well by doing good, whatever business you're in. Because if you're helping people, you will never starve.
You know, as you're speaking, you're talking about the risks involved. Some of our stackers listening to this might think, well, then there's a safer path, this secure path. And I remember somebody telling me early in my career says there's two doors in life. One says opportunity. The other one says security. Whoever reaches for the security door gets neither, meaning that working for somebody else also has its own risks and pitfalls and issues. And I mean, we've seen that with layoffs. I was talking to somebody, by the way, affiliated with Bank of America, which, Doug, you know how much I love Bank of America. That's my best joke of the day so far. And said point blank that Bank of America loves working from home. They love people working from home. And Doug, I actually talked about the thing that you and I were talking about where you said it's better and it's yada yada. And I said, no. And guess why Bank of America loves people working from home?
It's easier to lay people off.
Easier to lay people off. Easier to let them go. Don't get attached to people. Makes people just robots and puts them in. And while everybody's rejoicing about work from home, your employer loves it too, because they're the, in this case, because they're the evil empire.
God. Doug, Joe's not going to let it go. Even this many months later, Joe's not going to let it go.
Wrong opinion from the mountaintops every chance he gets.
You like how I worked that into this episode too, Doug?
Wow.
Yeah, it's an ongoing fight, Sandy. It's ongoing. I got to keep the dream alive. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the other two paths, the company climber path and also the virtuoso path. What are those? And I think you guys are in, I think all of you either are in those or know somebody who's close to you who's in one of those two paths. So we're going to dive into those. But at the halfway point of every show, we have a year-long trivia competition between our three frequent contributors, OG, who is not here, Len Penzo, who is not here, and Paula Band, who is not here. So I think to keep it, make it very easy. Sandy, I think we'll keep the genders the same. So you'll be playing Team Paula. How about that?
All right.
And I think we'll keep
ahead of time, Paula.
and I think we'll keep the CFPs together. So Eric, you'll be playing for OG.
It's my pleasure.
And then we'll keep the wingdings together and we'll put
the old bald guys together.
we'll keep them together, Len and Doc G. And Sandy's been the longest for you, I think, since you've been on. So I got good news and bad news for you around playing for Paula.
All right, fire away.
Well, do you want the good news or the bad news first?
I'll take bad news.
Well, the bad news is that Paula, as usual, the most brilliant person on our show.
Is she beating the pants off of you?
No, she's always in last place. And she's in last place again. Yes.
Come on, Paula.
Besides Doug. I'm sorry. The score here is Len 4, OG 4, and Paula 2 here still fairly early in the season.
In Paula's defense, though, she's the youngest of you guys. So you've got, you know, a bunch more years of experience to get those right answers. So.
I think it has more to do with Paula pays zero attention to the baloney we put on the trivia. We the irrelevant stuff. She doesn't pay any attention to that, but good cover. Yeah. But there is good news, Sandy, which means you get to guess last. Eric, because Len is last year's winner, you will guess first.
Excellent.
And because that's our tiebreaker, and Doc, you're in the middle. So there we go. All right. We need a trivia question, though, Doug, and I know we got a good one today.
Coming right up, Joe. Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. On this day in 1909, the Catholic Church made Joan of Arc a saint. Born into the peasant class of France in the midst of the Hundred Years' War, Joan...
I love looking at Sandy's face already.
I feel like this is a setup.
Anyway, Doug, sorry.
Joan felt a divine calling to defend her home country against invading English forces. I mean, who hasn't? We feel you, Joan. We feel you. Acting on orders she claimed to have received from Saints Michael, Margaret, and Catherine... She joined the war effort at the age of 17. I guess kids didn't have much else to do without smartphones back then. With no military training whatsoever, Joan led French troops to victory at the Siege of Orleans in 1429. Remember, Joe? Although that single victory...
Right here, dude.
Although that single victory was a catalyst for the English army's retreat, the war went on for another 34 years. Well, I mean, what choice did they have? It wasn't called the 66-year war. Today's trivia question is, how many battles did Joan of Arc lead her troops into? I'll be back right after I find out how to apply for sainthood. Although, you know, I bet, yeah, somebody's probably already submitted me.
I'm sure they have. On multiple occasions, Doug. All right, Eric, you've got the honor of going first here. Jonah, you're a big fan of Joan of Arc.
A huge fan. I want to make sure that I understand the question. I would like some clarification here since I have to go first. We're talking about how many battles that she led her troops into, not how many she won. Because to the best of my knowledge, France has only won one battle in history. Is that true?
I don't know about winning one battle ever, but I do know that we're talking about, yes, not yeah. one.
How many did she lead her troops into?
How many did she lead her troops into in 34 years from 17 to 51, assuming she was, in fact, alive for all of them? I'm going to go with 170.
170 times she took
170.
Up
the... And the reason that I chose that is twofold. One, mathematically, I've been thinking in my head, and two, it caused Sandy a lot of consternation because she was like, where in the hell did you come up with that?
Know what to say.
I mean, I saw her panic, and that's what I was going for.
Did the girl sleep? Like,
well, you know, 34 years, 12 months per year. I mean, that's 400 months. I figure it wasn't every other month, but it was regular. Every 10 weeks, they got in some kind of skirmish. I'm going with 170.
170. Doc, what do you think?
I don't know if you can hear me because there's a lot of noise going on here, but I'm going to say that he's a little bit high. I'm going to go for 150.
150. So Sandy and your giant, is that a giant Stanley Cup that you have?
Oh no, I don't support.
$138.
I'm still cheap. Stanley.
When I think no. Stanley Cup, I think ice hockey, Joe. You know
I do
that,
too.
Right? Yeah.
I'm like, what people drink it on? But it is. Have you seen how big they are, though? They are the size of the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a brewmate. So, and someone much sent better. This to me because I would never spend that much money for a cup. Absolutely not.
Enter the Red Solo Cup.
Classic.
Yes.
Eric's playing beer pong while we're recording.
Whatever's
this.
In here, I'm not telling you what's in here, but I got to get through this show.
Something's got to be in there for you to guess that number.
All right, Sandy, what are you thinking?
Wait, how many years was she at this for? 30 years?
What, he didn't say.
She didn't live that long, did she?
I don't know.
We got 170 and 150.
I think you guys are ridiculous.
There's no question
we're both ridiculous.
I'm going to help you out here a little bit, Sandy. You can either go to try to get an accurate number or just play strategy on where their guesses are versus where your guesses are.
Oh, I think they're ridiculous. I'm going to go much lower. I'm going to be Bob Barker. I'm going to go 50.
50.
So she could have gone 149 is what Doug was saying. You could have gone 149 and still been the closest.
I could have done the $1.
She's gone to 50.
That was Doug.
Eric's the new referee on the show, apparently.
He was trying to help
the rules official.
Sorry, I haven't watched The Price is Right in a while. I said 50, so I guess.
But she can't change her answer now. Not allowing
sorry,
it.
Sorry, Paula. Sorry. But I don't think they lived that long back then. She didn't live long enough to write that.
You were following Joan's career the whole time, weren't you, Sandy?
She was a saint.
No.
She was a saint. Saints don't just die. Hang out.
Sandy's a saint for being on the show and putting up with this.
Amen.
We will have an answer. 170 is Eric's answer. 150 is Doc G's answer. Sandy cuts him off at the knees, goes with 50, way lower. We'll see who's right in just a minute. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Well, don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment's the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money's breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money in the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. The answers are locked in. Eric, you began with 150 battles. 170.
170.
Sorry, you were 170. After you heard Doc G and Sandy, you feeling confident?
I literally have no idea. And so I was doing a little math, thinking maybe she lived a lot longer than many in her era. But the answer could as easily be 200 as it is 7. So I literally have no idea. And that's what's going to make this fun. But if I didn't win, I'm hanging up. So it's all right.
Doc, 150 look good. And I think you're got to feel a little lucky that Sandy's a little rusty at this game and didn't say 149.
What I'm feeling is that at worst, I'm second place, right? Someone will probably be farther from it than me. So as long as I'm not the worst of the three, I'm good. Like, I'm good. That's as much as I can hope for in these games.
I used to have a guy we played board games with. His name was Doug, actually Doug. And it's not this Doug, but Doug's goal playing board games was just don't finish last. And that's kind of you, Doc G. Just don't finish last. Sandy, you're either first or last with 50. Okay. What are you thinking? You feeling confident?
I think that she didn't live that long. Because I recall that she was this young and hygiene wasn't great. Yeah. And they were in battles all the time.
I heard she kind of torched her career.
Ba-dum-bum.
What, too soon? Is it too soon?
It's soon.
It's been a couple hundred years. I think you're good. I think these guys were ridiculous in their numbers. I don't know.
Here we go. Doug, you've got the answer. Who's going to win this thing?
Hey there, stackers. I'm natural born leader and probable future saint, Joe's mom's neighbor, yeah. Doug. In May of 1431, at just 19 years old, Joan of Arc met her untimely death when she was famously burned alive at the stake on orders from the British government.
That's what I'm talking about.
Today's trivia question is, how many battles did Joan of Arc lead her troops into? The answer? While she's known for her shrewd military leadership, Joan never actually fought in combat, opting instead to carry a flag into battle. It's like that saying, the flag is mightier than the sword.
Wait, oh, that saying.
That's the saying, right? Yeah, probably. Anyway, yeah. Joan and her troops won the siege at Orleans along with... Well, I'm not going to tell you. I will say that it was 157 fewer than... Oh, Eric guessed, 137 fewer than Jordan guessed, just 37 fewer than what Sandy guessed, because the total number of battles she led her troops into was 13, giving her a winning percentage of 692, good for second place in the American League East.
Come on, Paula.
I just want to say that Eric was more wrong than I was.
Well, and in behavioral finance, Doc, you allowed my 170 to change your mind.
Yes.
Because you
yes.
would have gone a lot lower if you had gone first.
It was all your fault.
You set the anchor, Eric.
But I also want to acknowledge that when you talked about her untimely death at the age of 19, Sandy was celebrating. No one has ever reacted that way to that part of the story.
Wait. In my defense, though, I said I didn't think she lived that long. So there weren't that many battles.
Enthusiastic to find out she didn't live that long is troubling to me. Again, well, too soon.
How do you get to sainthood? I mean, you got to die. That's the first step, right?
I don't know. Maybe Doug doesn't want the gig anymore, if that's true.
Time for the second half of our maybe a little bit higher stakes discussion, the one that we probably should get back to. It's brought to you by depositaccounts.com. Sandy Smith, you know what happens when you go to depositaccounts.com?
You put money in?
Actually, just go to depositaccounts.com and you can compare more than 275,000 deposit rates from over 11,000 banks and credit unions for free. You'll see whether that account that you have is actually competitive. And let me tell you, I just pulled it up here, and the national average savings account, I have it on Good Word at Bank of America, speaking of them, it's 0.01, but the national average is 0.51. Oof. If you're in the top 1%, it's 4.98. So you can take a look at your accounts, whether it's savings accounts, CDs, checking accounts, money markets, compare, ditch the rotten one, switch to the better one, and save a bunch of money for yourself at depositaccounts.com. All right, into the second half, and we're going to go back to corporate America, which was part of that, you know, saving. I think that the saver investor path to wealth includes a lot of entrepreneurs. This one clearly doesn't. Doc, what is the company climber's path all about?
These are the people who made decent money in corporate America and just stayed there and worked it out, middle management, putting money in their 401ks. This is the 401k millionaire, and there's tons of them in the United States. So they're people who mindlessly probably didn't even realize what they were doing, put their money in their 401k. That went into a target date fund, or nowadays a lot of them go directly into target date funds. And they just worked like busy bees for 20 years.
It says this is the second hardest path to becoming a millionaire. And about 31% of the rich people that I studied, Tom says, fell into this group. Sandy, if I know your backstory a little bit, you were kind of on this train at one point, the company climber. And I also know there were people trying to claw you back into it as you were like, no, thank you. Please let me off this train.
Yeah, I definitely was a climber. And according to Fidelity, very much on the path to be a 401k millionaire. However, for those of you who don't know, I'm a senior certified professional in HR as well, doing stuff in finance. I am the anti-HR HR person. So where I definitely was a ladder climbing individual, I'm not a supporter of the ladder climber per se. And I think a lot of people think that they will be these ladder climbers who will make oodles and noodles of money at their jobs. And for most people, that just is not true. That's not what happens with most people.
Eric, Sandy kind of presents this, I don't know, as I'm thinking like it's a Ponzi scheme. Everybody trying to get there. Maybe we're selling multi-level marketing. Like, hey, you start off on the bottom rung and work your way up.
If you work really hard, we're all family here.
Until they fire you.
Let me get you that pizza party.
We had one of those for lunch today, the pizza party, but it wasn't a goodbye. And it was good pizza. See, here's the thing. I spent in my career a glorious 10 and a half to 11 months in corporate America before realizing I never wanted to do that again. I always wanted to be in a small enterprise and to be an entrepreneur and was not going to play the politics of the ladder climb. And I just couldn't handle most of the nonsense. And that was 30 plus years ago. The nonsense is dramatically worse.
Oh,
now.
It's 10 times worse.
It now. Is so much worse. The politics and the problem with ladder climbing and the problem with the corporate path is usually to move up, you have to move out. Because for some reason, somebody else's talent looks better than the talent you have. It's the grass being greener. And so in order to get a real raise other than cost of living, you have to switch companies because somebody's trying to lure you back and forth and back and forth. And that can involve geographic moves. It certainly involves culture shock. It's disruptive. And that's not to say you can't make money in corporate America. You certainly can. But for me, that would be akin to selling my soul. I'm not doing it. I just can't do it.
Well, what's interesting, before you take a stab at this, Doc, by the way, for everybody listening, it does not surprise me that we have a roundtable of anti-ladder climbers. Like, this is kind of who we are in the community that we're in. So I will say the ladder climbing aficionados are not represented that much here. Doug, I'm going to go to you in a second, but they're not that represented on a roundtable like this, Doc.
Well, so I am somewhat of a representative of that, not because of my own career, but that of my wife. She joined a company after college and has been at that same company for the last 25 years.
How rare is it?
I don't. Well, actually, in her company, she works with lots of people who've been there 30, 35 years. And that company over this time has paid for our health insurance, has given her tons of bonuses, has given her tons of stock, has added a huge amount to her 401k. Even though I don't like some of the tactics of this company and some of the things I've seen this company do, I will tell you, we have benefited by far as a family from this company. And she has a lot of colleagues and cohorts who have. And not only when they did occasionally get fired, a lot of them had such good experience that they were grabbed up by another company right after they were left and made more money. And so, yes, I couldn't live that life myself, but my family has definitely been served by it. And they've been generous in many, many ways, but the expectations were high.
Doug, you're married to somebody who's also on this path.
Well, and I was too. I spent 30 years in corporate America, and I would say it served me quite well as well. Look, it wasn't easy, but nothing is. Being an entrepreneur isn't easy. I love the quote you'll see occasionally. I don't know who said it or who made the meme, but you know, everything's hard. Choose your heart. Right? I mean, being in shape is hard. Being out of shape is hard. Being overweight is difficult. And being, you know, there are definitely a lot of frustrations working in corporate America. And are the upsides potentially stratospheric as an entrepreneur? Absolutely. But there's an awful lot, to your point, Doc, there's an awful lot to be said for the stability. Reasonable stability. I know there's a lot of people scoffing at their devices right now because there's nothing that's super sure, but it's a little bit more certain, at least for 3 to 5 year time periods in a corporate environment than there is in an entrepreneurial environment. And there's pros and cons to both. And I would say it doesn't suck. I mean, there's a lot to be said for getting that healthcare and for having a clear understanding of what your mission is every day and what your opportunities are.
So I think there are a couple of things that we probably need to discuss. One is definitely the changing landscape of work, of jobs and what that is. Doug, you were a climber for like 30 years. The office has evolved quite a lot. I would say rapidly in the last 5 years. I feel it for Gen Z because they have a completely different environment than even I've got as a Gen Xer. And the other thing is the climber, it used to be the case where you could come in and you could expect to get promoted within that company and really build a career, et cetera. Now you have to be very strategic with your career and know that the best way to potentially build your career and to climb is by leaving.
Oh, yeah. That hasn't changed,
and so you have to engineer your own career.
That's not new at all.
Well, the tenure is now, well, the average tenure now is, depending on if you're male or female, it's different, by the way, is about 4 years.
Yeah.
You have to be very strategic in thinking what's next, not just in terms of earnings, but where am I going to go up?
That was true for me for most of my career. That length of tenure for the, you know, from the early 90s through the late teens in IT, which is where I spent my career, was typically 4 to 5 years. And you had to act like an entrepreneur. Sorry, Joe, but I want to say it's not all just post-COVID.
No. The number has always been there. I think that you're right that the number's been there. When I've seen people, back when I was a financial planner, I saw clients, you know, that would really hit their stride. It was always moving companies. But to Sandy's point, that number has gone up. I remember quoting a number 10 years ago that the average person's going to work for 4 companies. I think that number now, the average person is 7. I think it's 7.
It could be 12 by the time. It could be 170. Oh, for sure. That's my number of the day is 170. But here's the other piece of that is that when you leave a company in 3-4 years, a lot of times you leave benefits behind. You don't vest in various things. So you might change for the salary, and the salary might be better, but you could be leaving a bunch of money on the table in unvested restricted stock or options or 401k matches or all these other things. And I think people look at that gross salary like it's the number that matters the most. And, you know, yeah. Joe, I think you said it's at one point in your 5-minute open that the employee benefits don't have to be the ice cream. They can be part of the deal. And one of the benefits to corporate America is usually better benefits.
Yes.
But they're only better if you use them and if you know how to navigate them and if you take some with you.
The HR director here saying hallelujah.
Well, no, it's true. I definitely benefited from employee benefits. I had a 6-figure hospital bill that I had to pay a copay on, which was just like $250, not the 6-figure. The company that I work for, thank God I had started 5 days before I ended up in the hospital.
Wow.
They had to pay for that bill, not me. I was in my hospital bed retroactively signing up for the medical coverage.
Wow.
Right? So there are those benefits that we don't think about that are really good. But if we're talking about the pathway to building wealth, you have to be strategic working for an organization. If you do get things like restricted stock, et cetera, those can be very, very attractive and really help to build quite a lot of wealth. But we have to emphasize with the younger generation that they understand the benefit of that as well versus just strictly their salary that they're seeing that they're taking home every day, because there is a disconnect with that. A lot of times I end up, because I also manage my company's 401k plan, I end up having conversations with the younger employees about the benefit of just even being in the 401k plan and leaving that money, match money on the table, which has no vesting schedule. You get it. It's yours immediately. And they're leaving immediate returns. They don't understand the long-term implications of that as well. So if in terms of building wealth with an org, we do have to take a look at the whole entire package as well to be able to build,
but
you know, wealth.
Even when we're entrepreneurs, we will sometimes take clients. I'll just make up an example. We'll take clients, not necessarily because in the balance sheet, it is the most profitable thing to do, but we'll do it because it helps grow capabilities for our new and burgeoning company, or that it creates a network. It gets us connected with somebody that we feel is going to put us on a different path. And so while we've just in the last few minutes focused quite a bit on some of the more black and white financial aspects, benefits and pay and stock options and those kinds of things, when you're in your early career, there's an awful lot to be said for possibly switching opportunities, maybe different companies if necessary, because of a skill set that you're going to gain that will change the path that you're on long term. And that's easier to do when you are, I'll say, less encumbered with spouses and kids and other in-house mortgages and other responsibilities. But it's still a very lucrative, potentially lucrative priority to choose versus just what pays me more, who's got a better match on the 401k.
I'm glad you said that, Doug, because even in this piece, what Tom writes is, the biggest thing you need to know if you're going to be the saver investor is to have that difference between the amount you're bringing in, the amount that's going out. You really got to pay attention to income versus expenses to get that big saving rate. If you're going to be the dreamer, you've got to have the right ring light and you got to make sure, I'm kidding there, but you seriously have to continually monitor where is this going, because you got to be in the 0.1, 0.1, 0.1%. You always got to be at the top of your game. I mean, you have to be at the top of your game to make that work. But then third, he says, for these company climbers, it is relationship building skills and networking that is the big thing. Not even, and I totally agree, Doug, with the skill set piece. Like you get this skill set. When we talked to Oscar Munoz from United Airlines, he talked about his time as a engineer, really helping. And he knew all the different departments of the company before he ran United, which was super helpful. But Doc, how important has relationship building and networking been for your spouse?
Oh, I think it was very important. And over the years, I imagine that she probably, like a lot of people, ended up keeping their jobs because of the relationships, or moved up in position because of the relationships, or were up for the promotion or raise. So I think that's incredibly important. You know, in any big environment like that, it's all about the politics. And I think you have people, for instance, here on this podcast right now who probably tired of the politics, and therefore we chose other pathways.
Yeah.
There are people who navigate those type of waters very well, probably like Doug, and therefore, you know, thrive in that kind of community.
How would you all feel about this?
What about me tells you I have the tact to be political?
That's what I've...
Only the fact that you spent like 30 years in corporate America.
That's what I've wondered.
The benefit of
it. It was 170 different companies.
That's what I've wondered about the whole 30 years I've known Doug.
So
I'm like, how did you survive in that environment, dude?
Let me pose a question to each of you, and I mean this sincerely. Do you feel like in the company climber's path versus the entrepreneurial type of path, do you agree with me? Because I'll share my theory on this, that the company climber's path also has a more finite end date. There comes a point where that ladder jumping and climbing becomes almost impossible, if not very difficult. You know,
retirement's a mandatory thing.
When you're 28 or 38 or 48 and you're building your skill set, people can't wait to hire you. When you're 58 or 68, it's a different game. And so as an entrepreneur, you start trading on wisdom and relationships that go beyond the academic and intellectual path that you might have been on, but it's open-ended. I mean, entrepreneurs.
Yeah, you can
surrounded
you can
by the
work
right
till
people.
You die.
Well, but you could work very differently.
I know.
Yeah, but corporate people become entrepreneurs. So a lot of them leave their corporate jobs and become.
So is that because they have to or because they want to? Like, in other words, I agree with you that a lot of times corporate folks then go and start their own consultancies. The question is, would they have been? And it's hypothetical. Would they have been better off had they done some of that sooner and built some equity in themselves rather than helping the company stock grow by 3 points?
I have to say, though, I don't think people do that as much to make money as they do it because that's the only sense of purpose they've ever
that's
known.
That's fair, too.
So I think a lot of these people, and I've known a lot mm-hmm. of them, right, especially through my wife, et cetera, a lot of them have those huge 401ks mm-hmm. and have some wealth saved up and have done very well in corporate America. But a lot of times, you know, they either see their end date at work or are part of a downsizing mm-hmm. or realize they're just not getting anywhere anymore in that business. And that's the only sense of purpose they've known Fair. For all of those years. And so they try to reproduce a situation that feels as good, but where they have a little more agency.
Women's earnings peak at 40. And I've been very conscious of that as a Black female in corporate America, what the peak earnings are. And also having been on both sides of either handing out layoffs, making the decisions on layoffs, and having been laid off, there definitely comes a time when you max out. Either you're going to be too expensive and they can employ somebody much less knowledgeable, but they can find somebody that's half the price. You will get priced out, or sometimes, unfortunately, you age out. Nobody wants to say that's what it is, but that's essentially what ends up happening. And so, yeah, there is a finite amount of time. And what I counsel people to do is remove anything that indicates dates on your, you know, resume, drop off your older jobs, whatever, to increase your as an opportunity. And also focus on as you get older.
That's great advice.
Oh, yeah. As you get older, yes, build those relationships 110% because your relationships can lead to your next job, or somebody who's worked with you before, they'll recommend you. My last 3 jobs were off of recommendations from people who I'd worked with. Those relationships were incredibly important. And then as you're nearing your end date, your number one job is to maximize your earnings, whatever that ends up being. And then you can leverage that into a consultancy, maximize your earnings and your information education, so that if you do age out, you can leverage that into a consultancy. And you could possibly start your consultancy with people who you've worked with before, you had these relationships that you've built before. So it does happen. And it doesn't just happen in corporate America. You'll see it with line workers, et cetera. There's some jobs where you just cannot do it after, you know, you're an airline pilot. They age out after a certain time. So they have a finite amount of time. So it does happen.
They're like podcast hosts that way.
That's why I'm telling all the people I know in corporate America that if they're doing their 401k, you want that target date to be 2095 because you don't want anyone to know how old you are. So
yeah. Right. Yeah. What date she got on the phone? You know, the fourth one, I don't think we have to spend a lot of time on, but I do want to spend a little here. It's called the Virtuoso's Path. These are people, rocket scientists, nuclear physicists, doctors, attorneys. I mean, people that spend a lot of time with very specialized knowledge mm-hmm. that will then pay them a lot of money for that specialized knowledge. And it says roughly 19% of the participants in his study chose that path. They're among the best at what they do at that profession. Sandy, you've got a member, somebody who's virtuoso in your family.
Yeah, my cousin has a number of patents in the automobile world. He's about my age. He's about 43. And he's set to retire in the next year or so. Has two homes that he owns, free and clear, one here, one overseas. Has a hefty retirement fund. And now he's looking for his next thing. His thing is he's going to retire. But I said, "What? You're going to be bored mm-hmm. within 6 months. Mm-hmm. I know you will. You've spent all that. You have this education, this knowledge. You've got these patents under your belt. What are you going to do?" And he hadn't thought about that. He thought he was just going to be retired and have live life and be great. And I was like, "No, you won't. You're going to be so unhappy. You cannot spend that much time doing all this and think you're going to sit and do nothing and twiddle your thumbs."
That's always what the jealous people say.
These people in the Dreamers, I think, are the most likely to attach their identity to their job, right? I mean, Taylor Swift is Taylor Swift. That is her identity. Doug and I know a physician in the Detroit area where we both lived who died in his 90s, still going to work every day. And it wasn't because he needed the money. He was successful way earlier than that. That was who he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was Dr. Dorsey. He was a badass, just a cool dude.
Love that guy.
But yeah. And the whole community loved him, but he was the doctor a lot. Doc G, I mean, you know, you went down this path.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about what motivates people deeply internally, motivates people to do things. And, you know, often comes up, it's purpose, autonomy, and mastery. And so what you're really talking about is the virtuoso is a master. They do something that they spent 10,000 hours or whatever the crazy number is learning how to do what they do. And so there are a lot of people in my former field, and I definitely call it my former field because I don't really identify as much as a doctor anymore.
Although you still do practice.
I do. And I do practice out of the joy of doing a very specific type of medicine. But I think for a lot of people, it's intoxicating. It's intoxicating having this sense of mastery. And when you take something like being a physician or a rocket scientist, or for a lot of people even being like a CPA, they also have this great sense of purpose. So when you get purpose and mastery, all you're missing is autonomy there, right? And so if you can also be a little bit entrepreneurial and build in a little autonomy, you've got kind of those keys to what looks like success and happiness.
They're making fun of the fact in the YouTube comments that we haven't heard anything about the fact that I'm going on vacation yet. So I think I'm contractually obligated to talk about this for a second, but seriously, I'm going on vacation with six virtuosos, and I've done this before, and it kind of sucks because they're so good at what they do. They're used to calling the shots. And when you get six people on a trip together, and they're usually the person who is the smartest person in the room, and everybody's always following what they say. And now we're deciding where to go to dinner. It's the downside of traveling. Don't travel with a bunch of virtuosos. That's going to be my takeaway. But seriously, Eric, what is the pitfall for people exploring this path? Somebody that, you know, wants to be the next future rocket scientist.
Well, first, I think it takes a very long time to get there. You know, Doc said 10,000 hours, and it also requires a lifelong education because you're not going to learn what you need to know in undergraduate, even graduate or PhD. You're not going to know everything at 27 that you're going to use at 77 because the world is a different place six times over in that path. So I think it's a commitment to lifetime learning and lifetime growing. And, you know, Sandy talked about how her cousin was going to be bored stiff. And I have to plug the fact that someone should write a book on that. So I did. The whole premise is that retirement is terrible for you and nobody should do it. And then instead we should graduate to the next iteration of ourselves and figuring out that purpose. Once you're debt free and you're financially independent and you've maintained your health and you've taken care of yourself, singularly, nothing more important than maintaining a sense of purpose and not having your LinkedIn page just say retired, because it might as well say dead. You know, you need to have a reason to get out of bed every morning. You need to continue to make a difference in people's lives. And it doesn't have to be for money. If you want to do consulting or mentoring or coaching or teaching or volunteering, or you do anything you want, if you've reached financial independence, what I beg people to do who are contemplating retirement is to have a plan qualitatively, not just quantitatively. Know what you're going to do long before you get there. Give yourself a 2-year runway to reinvent yourself, because you don't just wake up that next Monday morning and figure out a new plan. That's not how we work. You're going to want to build the network in that area. If you're thinking of starting a consultancy, have it set up in advance. Know some of the things that you're going to do. Have your website, have your collateral. If you're going to be volunteering, already know how to get on one of those boards or on one of those committees, or already know the right people in that sector so that you can go in and make a difference Monday morning and not then try and just figure it out like you're surfing online, because people will stop getting out of bed every morning and it's tragic.
I love how you're pointing to the cross skills too. Like, you know, there is still relationships and networking when you're a virtuoso. You're smart, but to really fulfill your promise, you got to be able to communicate that with other people. Mm-hmm. I think also being able still to separate income versus expenses for everybody, like the saver investor person. And then also always thinking about how do we sharpen the saw? How do we sharpen that career like the dreamer? I think there is all this, a lot of cross stuff. Unfortunately, I think that's where we got to leave it, guys. I could talk about this topic much, much, much longer, but I think we did a great job. We have 4 virtuosos on this call and me. So nice job, team. Let's find out what's going on where all of you are. So Sandy, you're clearly not going to talk about Elevate.
No.
Because I tried earlier.
You did.
So instead, let's talk about your business.
Yes. The business is Uncle Clarence Barbecue, UncleClarenceBBQ.com, shameless plug. Shameless plug. And what it is this is my husband's passion project that's now turned into a business for him. And I am in the background of said business. And the signature product is a barbecue sauce made with blueberries. I had the benefit of watching this product be created and evolve over the last 20 years. I said to him, hey, you have an opportunity to create this business while your wife is slaving away and talking on podcasts with these guys. Why don't you create a business and I'll be your sugar mama? And he said, you don't have to tell me twice. So that's where we are.
How do I find one of those?
You know, I want
Sandy,
one too.
Sandy, I got to tell you, that sounds delicious, but it will stain a shirt.
You know what? I have to figure out if it does, because I haven't gotten as far as dripping it on my shirt. That's a good one.
Well, drip it on somebody else's shirt.
If you put enough silicone in it, Sandy, it won't stick to anything. I would recommend adding that to the recipe.
Delicious additive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong? Eric, thanks for joining us again. You mentioned the book and the book Don't Retire, Graduate.
Yeah, the second edition was published today. It hit Amazon today.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Fabulous.
Second edition is a huge thing.
It's the second edition. It took me 4 years to finally realize that this should be timeless and not timely, because it's immediately obsolete. One piece of legislation can ruin any nonfiction book. So so now it is designed to be the tools people need to build their own financial plans with or without an advisor, starting at whatever age they are, whether they're a virtuoso or a career climber or an entrepreneur or a dreamer. So there's a workbook with it. It is a path to financial independence starting wherever you are. I'm still sitting in the CEO seat for as long as they'll have me here at BFG Financial Advisors in Maryland. Actually,
I heard your boss is horrible.
Well, I'm not going to use the word because it's a family friendly show, but
earmuffs.
Yeah. Doug. Yeah. Don't do it. Actually, I've already identified my successor and I'm on a sort of a 4-year path, and she's going to be the CEO and she's going to crush it. She's going to do better than I ever could. So my job is going to be to become a growth officer and be doing a lot of M&A and growing the company from a business development standpoint, and doing a lot of consulting, which, you know, as I mentioned, already have it set up. That's done. I'm already doing some consulting and doing the media. And the podcast will be back at some point, Joe, but not until you're ready to co-host it with me. In your free time.
I've got nothing else going on, big guy.
I know. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you very much. And we will link to the book and your financial planning practice our show notes page. And we'll link to Uncle Clarence's barbecue sauce on the show notes page, as well as, Doc, what's happening over at the beautiful Earn and Invest podcast. Speaking of podcasts.
So at Earn and Invest, we just interviewed Kevin Anderson, who has a company of ghostwriters. And so that's something that's very interesting and exciting to me, since I've been an author and I've gotten intimately familiar with publishing. And then coming up, we have an interview with Amy Daughters, who started writing her friends on Facebook, handwritten letters. And we talk about the magic of handwritten letters, and just kind of, she wrote 2 books about it, and all sorts of interesting things happened
when she put pen to paper and started writing people who she only knew from social media.
It's my favorite thing.
It's very cool.
It is. Whenever I get a handwritten thank you from someone, I'm always like, I should do this. And I've been saying that for 10 years and I don't, but I still appreciate it so very, it makes a, every day that goes by, it makes a bigger impact than it did yesterday. It just.
Yep. Joe, if you'll give your home address on the air, I'll bet a lot of people would be glad to send you a note handwritten right now.
And pictures.
And photos.
Right. And on that note, I think we're about done. Doug, there were a lot of takeaways from this show. That might not be one of them. What are our top three, man?
Well, Joe, here's what's stacked up on our to-do list after today's discussion. First, take some advice from our piece. Which path are you on to building your fortune? Is it the one that fits your goals best? If not, switch paths and chart a course. If so, maximize and prioritize based on the strengths of that path and stay diligent, stacker. Second, take some advice from Doc G. Planning on hitting the big time in sports or music? Well, you may not have a 3-octave range or a cannon for a right arm, but almost everyone can be an entrepreneur and create their own wealth. But what's the biggest to-do? I'm going to go grab the Texas flag and lead the neighborhood troops over to Arkansas. Time to take this city for Texas once and for all. Who's with me? Thanks to Eric Brotman for joining us today. You can learn more about Eric at bfgfa.com. And don't forget to pick up 10 copies of his book, Don't Retire, Graduate, wherever books are sold. We'll also include links in our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. That's the minimum order, I'm told. Thanks. Thanks also to Sandy Smith for hanging out with us today. You'll find everything you want to know about Sandy at yesiamcheap.com/weddingsareforsuckers.
Wait a minute. What's the URL for Uncle Clarence's?
UncleClarenceBBQ.com.
And you got to pick up a case. That's probably the minimum order.
Oh, of course. Or you can go on Amazon or Walmart because we're there too.
Fabulous.
And finally, thanks to Doc G for coming on the show today. You can listen to more of Doc G on the Earn and Invest podcast.
And what can they buy of mine?
They just...
Because they got to buy at least a case or 10, whatever it is. Maybe 170.
They got to buy 10 copies of Taking Stock.
There you go.
That's what they got to do. Or listen to 10 episodes of the show.
This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2024, and is created by Joe Saul-Sehy. Our producer is Karen Repine. Karen and Joe get help from a few of our neighborhood friends. You'll find out about our awesome team at stackingbenjamins.com, along with the show notes and how you can find us on YouTube and all the usual social media spots. Come say hello. Oh yeah, and before I go, not only should you not take advice from these nerds, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show.